Welcome to Musings from Sam Houston Stomping Grounds, a production of the Newton Gresham Library at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville, Texas.
This is Michelle Martinez, reference librarian, interviewing Dr. Carolyn Krim of the History Department on her book, Cabin Fever, The Roberts Ferris Cabin, A Campus, A Cabin, A Community. I had so much to ask, because I went ahead and read your book, The Cabin Fever.
I was impressed. I didn't realize that you actually would read it.
I loved it, and it just brought up a whole bunch of questions. So the first one being, what's so fascinating to you about log cabins?
Well, I had started a master's degree at Texas Tech in architecture and realized very soon that I wasn't very good at architecture itself, but I was interested in the structure of the buildings and historic buildings. And while I was at Tech, one of the things that they did not let us do, they never took us across the street to the museum. We never got to see any of the beautiful old historic log cabins that they have at Texas Tech. And they never let us touch a single tool. Oh, wow. And so to me, that hands-on kind of history is what's important for our students. So when I came here, Linda Pease was the one who asked if I would be willing to help with this little cabin. And very naively, of course, I said, sure, of course. I've got a couple of Texas history classes during the summer. We can do this. And so it was, according to tradition, it was the oldest log cabin in the county. And it was deteriorating. It was literally rotting from the ground up. Worms get into the logs from the ground, and so the only way to save it had been given to the city by the Ferris family, and the only way to save it was to move it. And that's one of the things that's a tragedy about these beautiful log cabins, is that the only way to save them is to remove them from their locations. And in this case, it was a cattle pasture out in over on the West Sandy and in the county. And so it was a very historic cabin, and they were able to trace the history because the Ferris family had owned it since the beginning and since it was built. And so this was a very useful means of following the history of the cabin and of the period and of the area.
Oh, that's great. Actually answered one of my other questions, is why would you move it out of context? And that makes me wonder, if a building has been, a historic building has been moved out of its context, how does a historian understand that building?
Well,
then?
that's one of the reasons that we took such careful notes on it, and that's why we wrote the book on it, so that we could trace, you know, what it was, had been, the history of the cabin, who had lived in it, what had been done to it, the fires. It had had a fire in the cabin, and so there was a lot of things that we were trying to preserve about the history of the cabin, and that was one of the reasons that we wrote the Cabin Fever book.
Are you planning on doing any more books with your students?
Theoretically, yes. I have two others in the works. We have one right now that one of my public history classes is working on the letters from the Wynn home. The Wynn home is a beautiful, restored home here in town that is being used by the Arts Commission right now as an art center. And they found 700 letters that were written to and from the Wynn home family. And so my students have been transcribing them, and hopefully we'll get those published this next year.
That's great. So do all your public history classes do hands-on work like
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. Yes, the public history class, and every year is a new experience because we try different things every year. One year we did festivals. One of my colleagues was getting married, and so we did a wedding ceremony for him out at the park.
Wow.
At the gazebo next to the museum, and it was just beautiful. And we had more fun doing it because the students actually did the cooking, they did the serving, they did the decorations, they set up the tables and chairs, they took down the tables and chairs, and so they knew exactly how to put on a complete wedding, right from the invitations all the way through the decorations and the cakes and everything to the flowers. And so it was a good experience for the students. So festivals was one of the courses. We've done restoring the Garant cabin, which is on the museum grounds, and so we had a class one year, and it was mostly girls, and they actually rebuilt the cabin log by log.
Right.
So they were able to to do a very good job with it. And then another class, we learned to hew logs, to square, you know, use axes.
Wow.
Nobody's ever been hurt, thank goodness, knock on wood. It's lucky I'm retiring, because nobody's ever been hurt. We had some near misses sometimes, mm-hmm. as you read in the book.
Yes.
But it's always been, you know, the good Lord has blessed us, and we've never had any problems.
That's great. So I take it that probably the university has a student sign a waiver saying if you're working on these cabins.
Well, there is insurance.
Okay.
There is insurance for the students, but that's standard policy for all courses.
So now do the students just sign up for your classes to get into these nifty projects? Are they expecting it ahead of time?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. This one that we're doing right now is back to basics. And okay. so they're learning not only how to cut wood, but they're learning how to can and preserve food.
Oh, wow.
And they're learning how to live off the land. We talked about hunting squirrels and actually learning to field dress them, but that didn't work out because it's no longer squirrel season.
Oh dear.
But if we ever get another Hurricane Ike, hopefully they'll be able to think in terms of, you know, learning to shoot and whatever.
So I need to bunk up with one of your students in case with
in
the
case
end of the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. If the Mayas are right and the world ends in 2012,
oh, that's
then
right.
you know, my students can survive.
So does being part of, was it the Texas Historical Preservation Society, does that help get you into places where as just a professor teaching a class on architecture and historical restoration might not get you?
Absolutely, absolutely. The Texas State Historical Association is a private group that does, primarily focuses on written history. But the Texas Historical Commission, which at this point, regrettably, the governor is threatening to cut, the Texas Historical Commission is the one that's in charge of preservation and restoration and putting markers on buildings. And so they are tremendously helpful in making suggestions or helping us with projects. And so, yeah, they have been most useful.
Oh, that's terrific. Something I've been curious about, this is my, like, big question that I've just been wanting to ask you. So if I see a restored object, is it possible that I might be misbelieving that it's technically restored, that it's actually historical in its face value? I mean, because in your book you talk about how there's things that, not to the naked eye or to the knowledgeable, you know, historian, you've kind of hidden away in places like the tin on the roof that's not
right.
really accurate to the official time period. Is that...
Or the tar paper on,
yeah.
on the cabin on the square.
So how often does that happen? And
usually, most buildings nowadays are not preserved. They are restored. And when they are restored, you use, if you can, items from the time period. For instance, the cabin on the square, we restored it with logs that actually came from that time period, a barn that was built at the same time. And so we were able to use those in the preservation of the building. When you restore a building, and most buildings are restored, you do not necessarily have to be absolutely accurate to the time period.
Okay.
And so you can have, like for instance, the little cabin on the square has air conditioning,
right.
which is probably not accurate. But it does have electricity, which of course would not have been the case. And so when you look at the little cabin on the square, you realize because it has the air conditioning, because it has the electricity, that it is not period accurate.
Mm.
But since it has a life of its own, in other words, it is a sales office for people who do handcrafts, because of that, it is has to be useful. It has to be usable.
Okay.
And so that's the reason that we don't worry about putting air conditioning in it. And now, if it was at Jamestown, or if it was, for instance, the other cabins that came from that same area that Carol Tharp, who was the man who brought all those cabins together down in Montgomery, and has now, they've been sold to a developer who is creating a small historic village at one of the places down in Montgomery. And those are... We accept the fact that they have to be restored, that they are not going to be accurate. Now, reconstruction, which is the lowest form of restoration. You can preserve, which is absolutely accurate, and that's what happens to buildings that are at Jamestown. You can restore, which is what we have here, which makes the buildings usable, or you can reconstruct, in which case it's just the shell. And so that's how you can always tell if the inside is not period accurate or is not at least tried to follow the requirements of the period. Then a reconstruction is something that is a modern house and can be used as a modern house. And so there are these three levels: the reconstruction, which is the least historic, the restoration, which is moderately historic, and then preservation, which is absolutely accurate and perfectly historic. Most houses are going to be in the middle range. In other words, they are not going to go to the point of making sure that every little detail is correct.
So then it's more about the atmosphere at that mm-hmm. point rather than...
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because in this case we are trying to recreate the area, the era of the time period. And so we are not trying to be exactly perfectly accurate in our preservation.
So when do you decide that something has to be either restored or reconstructed or can actually be fully saved as it is?
It depends on what the building is going to be used for.
Okay.
So, in other words, the Garant cabin over at the museum is going to be a historic building that is going to be seen by children, and so it is preserved. It's preserved in, and that's what most of the buildings on the museum grounds are. They are preserved. Whereas the little one on the town square had to be used for a shop. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, then it had to be just a restoration.
Okay. When, in your book, you said that you had, was it free labor from the prison system?
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about that? Did they tell you these were like nonviolent criminals? Were you worried at all? Or?
Well, the Texas Department of Criminal Justice is required by law to provide its inmates as workforce for the community in which they live. And so in this case, they come out and they hang the Christmas ornaments during Christmas. They do painting and restoration on the buildings downtown. They are involved all over the community. They help with the folk festival. And I absolutely worship the ground they walk on, because they put up my tents for me, they haul all my equipment for me, they put everything up for me. And it was the most amazing thing to see those men. They took such pride in that cabin. And after they got out, many of them brought their families back to see the cabin.
That's
because
amazing.
They literally put their hearts and souls into that thing. And they got, there was two teams. It was the Mexican team and the African American team competing over who could make the most shingles, because the shingles are very hard to make.
I remember reading about that. I was impressed that they managed to knock those out when your students were struggling just to make one.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, they, every day, they would have to take the froze, the blade that mm-hmm. is used to split the shingle off from the log. Every day, they would have to take them back to their blacksmith shop to be restored, because literally, they were working so hard and working so fast. And, of course, poor Sean, the Main Street manager, he was the one that was bringing the logs in for them, these great, huge, round, usually 24 inches long mm-hmm. and about 24 inches across, and then they would split the two sides to square the log, and then they would just begin splitting the shingles all the way across the log. So it was an amazing feat. An amazing feat, and my students would never have been able to do it, because we didn't have access to the blacksmithing shop. We didn't have the teams of men that could do it for days on end, and it took them days and days and days to do it. But they were hardworking.
Is there anything that you miss about building that cabin that you've not been able to do since?
That particular cabin was, and I don't know whether it was just the cabin or whether it was the way that everybody came together on it, because it was definitely college community and the prison system. Everybody worked together to make it successful. So it was a wonderful, wonderful experience, and we've never been able to repeat that. But we've had other fun times. The festival class was fun, and this class that I have now is fun, and we're always doing fun things, so the kids always get a kick out of the class. class, whatever it is.
Have you had the prison system help you since in any of these
projects? Oh, good heavens, yes. They are working on the Bear Bend cabin, as a matter of fact. This is a beautiful, great, huge, long, 60-foot cabin that was another one of the ones from Carol Tharp down in Montgomery. And this was one that Sam actually hunted bear out of down in Montgomery. And so it actually relates to Sam Houston. And so that's one of the reasons that it has been brought up to the museum. And they have put the roof back on it. They have put the porches back on it. They have, as a matter of fact, they'll probably be building the two stone chimneys. They built the stone chimney on the little cabin downtown, but they're going to be restoring the stone chimneys on either end of the Bear Bend cabin, which is also a beauty. We haven't even had a chance to work on that one. The prisoners have done it all.
Talking about chimneys, I remember in the book you said something about mudcats, about wanting to build, was it the type of chimney that you could lever away from the building in case of a fire?
Yes.
Have you ever gotten to build one? Or
We didn't build a mudcat chimney. We did hew logs to build a wood chimney. And the one at the Grant cabin at the museum. A mudcat is just usually Spanish moss, and it's packed with wet mud. And then the Spanish moss is draped over little slats of wood that are built into the inside of the chimney. And so these packets, if you will, these little muddy protectors is what they are. The mud is there to protect the inside of the chimney and the wooden slats that the chimney is made up of. But the mud dries and eventually will fall off, and then the danger of having that chimney burn is pretty good. Now, the one downtown, the cabin on the square, actually has a metal liner on the inside. So we could use that chimney. We could use that fireplace if we needed to.
So are there any, books or places you'd suggest a student to start if they're interested in historical architecture or Texas history? I mean, where do you send your students?
Well, as a matter of fact, this group this time are going to have to do environmental papers that deal with reconstruction and restoration and preservation. And luckily, thanks to the Internet, you just get on Google and look up preservation. The Texas Historical Commission, as I mentioned before, has dozens of books available on the topic. And so there are lots and lots of materials that, people can use, can find, either on the Internet. There are dozens of books.
Do you have any favorites that were like your Bible when you were in school? Or
No. Well, that was the problem. The ones at Tech were not practical. They were all of them, just great, huge manuals on how to, but we never got to how to. So that was one of the things that I wanted to do with my students. The Department of Internal Affairs, no, what the heck is it called? The one that has the bison on its seal, I've forgotten what the heck they're called. Department of, they handle minerals, they handle parks, they handle...
Interior,
yes, there you go. Department of the Interior, yes, okay. Department of the Interior has, they actually have summer camps that you can go to, summer programs. And we went, Mac Woodward and Jordy went, and I went to one in Montana that was just wonderful. It was storing and preserving buildings, how to close them up for the winter and when you finished restoring or when you finished working on them and haven't finished restoring them. So it's a very useful series of programs that they have. They're expensive, but they're worthwhile.
Do you plan on continuing with preservation when you retire?
No. Unhappily, somebody else will have to take over for me, and I'm hoping that they will hire somebody, but the way things are looking right now, chances are good they won't. But the museum, of course, will continue to preserve and focus on the buildings and their preservation.
Okay. So is there any place in Texas that you'd really like people to focus on with restoration? Is there a particular place that you know about or that you care about?
Well, there are cabins all over the state. Terry Jordan, a university history geography professor, has written a book on log cabins of Texas, and he lists the few that are remaining. There aren't a whole lot remaining. And so I'm hoping that the ones that we have preserved will be sufficient to show people what it was like back in the day.
Well, this is great. Thank you so much.